doubt many of you were shocked at the horror of what happened in Boston yesterday. Bringing to mind again the existence within our culture, our very culture in America, just as the massacre at Newtown brought us into awareness of it, and numerous other situations, I was surprised to see how many thousands of people who were killed by guns in America since Newtown. It's really quite shocking. And perhaps for many of you, you wondered, who are these people? Who are these people that would have such malevolence, that would intentionally want to kill their fellow beings? Who are they? So it brought me to reflecting upon upon evil. We don't speak much in Zen of evil. But I want to present to you a kind of a spectrum of our human being, which I believe clarifies this idea of evil. First of all, fundamentally, it's important to realize, as most of you hopefully do, that we live in a what we call a dualistic world. It is a given for most individuals to consider things in terms of this and that, you and me, high and low, good and bad, and so on, as though they were facts. So one of the first things that we try to do in our Living Dharma school of Zen is to help people to, by analysis and by observation of themselves and others, realize that at any given moment, no one could do other than what they're doing at this moment. In teaching this, we start with your posture. You can think of all other kinds of posture that you could be sitting in at this moment. But you're not. Why not? The glib answer is, well, I chose. But if you look inside and try to find a chooser, and just go a little bit deeper and try to find exactly what goes on when you do anything, say anything, you realize that it's the coming together of a group of causes and conditions that result in that particular behavior at that moment, and nobody there to choose it. Now, once you realize that, not only does it release you, and I'm not speaking of an idea, ideas are bullshit useless. I'm speaking of that you have done it till you experience for yourself, this is so. Not as a belief, not as an idea. You can contend with all these kinds of things if you leave them at the idea level. But be more honest with yourself and go under and try to find what actually is occurring in your being at a given moment. Kind of analysis, realizing that nothing could have been different in the past or in the present. We are not saying about the future, which, like the past and present, does not exist. In actuality, bring me a bucket full of future, for example. Bring me a handful of present. How finely can you slice to get to the definition of the present, and it's all silliness, all nonsense, all in the realm of useless thinking, versus turning to your actual experience. So, when you realize that as an actual experience, that nothing could have been different in your life or other people's lives at any given moment, it immediately abolishes guilt, blame, and resentment, all of which are based upon the idea that an individual or yourself could have done something differently. And secondly, and most importantly, it opens the arms of compassion. The arms that begin with acceptance. You might say, I don't like it, but I know that it's true, so I have to accept it. Just like if it's raining on a day you wanted to have a picnic. You accept it, though you might not like it. This is a big start. And then secondly, we teach people to look inside and make every honest effort they can to find who they are. Who is this one of which I speak? The person with these characteristics, with these behaviors, with these whatever it is. And if you're honest in your investigation, nobody ever finds a self. Ever. Throughout all of history. And throughout all of history, there are answers to that, which are finite. There's about half a dozen categories of answers that people always give to this question of who am I? Identification with one's work, with one's role in society, with one's ethnic origins, with one's behavioral characteristics that come up every so often, by one's ability to be a sensory being, and so on and so on. But these change. And these are not the ones that beat your heart, circulate your blood, bring thoughts to your mind. No, these are very different. They are, we call them identifications. Because in every human being there is a hunger to know who they are and to know what is the reality of the world. And we settle for things like these glib ideas of self and these ideas that we have, this an oak tree and a maple tree and so on. I won't go into the analysis now, but some of you know what I mean, and some of you may not yet know what I mean. And I hope that someday you will, and you will hear us talk about it, and you will undertake the investigation that shows you there is no such thing. And moreover, the third thing is investigating things in the world, including yourself, and finding that there is no fixed entity at all. You know the example that I give of a tree. We think a tree is separate from a rock. And we have to engage in that way of speaking in order to facilitate things happening in the world. But we have to realize it's just a way of speaking because that tree, if you take it out of the ground, put it into a closed warehouse, stops treeing. We speak, our silly minds speak of a dead tree, just as we speak of a dead person, as though the person is there, but there's something kind of peculiar about it. They're dead. I won't go into all the analysis, but a tree is related to everything in this universe. As you realize, the soil, the breakdown products of mountains that have produced the soil, the times that the mountains were produced in the history of the earth, and the way the earth was produced in the history of the universe, and so on, and the way the right level of level of oxygen and nitrogen and carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is essential for the life of that tree, and that was the result of causes and conditions that go back millions and millions of years. And similarly, the distance from the sun and the temperature that is the result of that is an absolute necessity for the life of that tree. And so it is connected with everything. It is not a separate entity. And you too are not a separate entity. Identify with your emotions. I am this kind of person. They come and they go, do they not? You do not come and go. And so on and so on. I won't need to go into that level of analysis, but it is an important beginning because it creates the space for actual sazen. Sitting on a cushion thinking your thoughts is useless. It's a waste of your time. It's doing nothing more than you would ordinarily do. It is not the process of sazen that can liberate us from bondage to these thoughts, from suffering, from the fear of death, and so on and so on. And finally, to the realization for oneself as an experience of what this fundamental reality is that encompasses trees and rocks and all human beings, the whole universe. That is what you are. But until you know it, it remains an idea, something you think about, something you kind of like, or you dislike, or you contend with, or you do something with it, but it's useless activity. What has to happen is another kind of work, which is the work of zazen. Now, I was thinking, given what happened in Boston yesterday, about evil. And I want to present to you a way of looking at it. And that is a vast spectrum, a great vast spectrum of us human beings and the level of our conscious awareness. There is, at the one hand, the awakened knowing that there is only one reality. And that reality manifests as you, as me, as trees and brooks, and clouds, and suns, and planets. And then there is the coming towards that, where you sense that you are on the threshold of it. You get a deep sense of, it's worth continuing this practice of zazen because I know it's just on the other side of this dark place that I will break through and find out for myself. That's one end of the spectrum. The other distant end of the spectrum is a place where individuals are so in bondage to these thoughts that these thoughts act like a capsule, an encasement, something that becomes more and more solid until it becomes so solid that we have people like the Taliban. We have people like these people that made those bombs that went off yesterday in Boston. Those people that slaughtered little children in Newtown. All the depredations of us human beings throughout the planet, do we need to name them all? The forcing of people, yes, today, into slavery. The forcing of young women in Southeast Asia and in this country into prostitution for the benefit of someone else. On it goes. This level of encapsulation can become very hard and rigid and, you might say, impenetrable. This enables people to think only of other people as objects. It is the extreme of objectification. You are not a person anymore. You're a thing. You are an American thing. You are a Pakistani thing. You are a some kind of a thing, but not a person. Therefore, I do not have to think of destroying or hurting a person because you're not that. You are a thing. So I can let my bombs off in the marketplace of Iraq or near the finish line in Boston. This is evil. It is something like cancer. Cancer cells have forgotten their boundaries. They have forgotten the tissue to which they belong. They become wanderers, disruptors. Our very metaphor in our culture, given the profound duality in which the culture resides, is that of battle. So I hear all kinds of stories as I am recuperating from this cancer and preparing for the next phase of its treatment about battle. Fight it. No. I will not engage in another dualistic framework because it is futile. It is false. It is a lie. But I will engage in gratitude for all those parts of my being that have kept me well all these many years and continue to do so and will continue to do so. And I will find ways of nurturing them. And having them nurture the life and integrity of this body. This is the inclusive attitude at the other end of the spectrum of the realization of who we people are, members of one body that includes those aspects that are evil, that are invasive. But such aspects may be so impervious to any other message than the message they themselves deliver, that of violence and that of destruction, that may be what we have to take into account as we have cells in our body that are able to rid our body of those things that are inimical to its life. Likewise in our culture. So let's think about it. It is easy to say, well, there are those evil people. There are those people, and I understand you, that are so encapsulated in this way of being that they think of other people only as objects. And I say, be careful. Because we all have to learn the work of ridding ourselves of the seeds of evil. How do we do that? What is we know the extremity of evil. We know the hardness of a capsule around ourselves that enables us no longer to see the humanity of other beings and have compassion and love for them and embrace them as part of our human space. These are the thoughts that come into the mind. the thoughts that we allow ourselves to be taken by, the things that we might think are innocent, and indeed we all are totally innocent. But you may think there's no harm in it. If you say there's no harm in it, you do not understand the human condition. You do not understand the process of Sazen. And you especially do not understand yourself. Every little motivation that takes you to do one little more twit on Twitter, or one more little look at the Facebook, or one more little this, little that, one more little look at that special news piece that's so entertaining and so awful and so, all these things. This is a compulsion inside that has a long history, ancient, ancient history of us human beings as dualistic beings. The process of Zazen turns the other way. Not away from them as they're being bad. They are not bad. They are just what they are. And that attitude of things are just what they are is in itself a big liberating attitude. But we look at them. And we look at how they take us over. We watch. We watch at that very second where we are about to think that thought, and then we learn about Zazen, and we say, we can observe that as a phenomenon. It's just one of those thoughts. It's just one of those feelings. It's just one of those impulses. It's just one of those. You can just notice it, not follow it, not elaborate it, not talk about it, not think about it, not tell stories to yourself and other people about it, but just let it go. And letting it go means let it be. Don't fight it. Don't make a judgment upon it. It just is what it is. It could not have not arisen. It is just what it is. Then you are beginning to learn the process of Zazen. And as you do that, and as you realize the great freeing benefit that it has for you, the way it starts to turn things around, it becomes a new habit for you. Something that you do because you realize there is no other alternative unless you want to be put into bondage by these thoughts. And then you have made a very hugely important step in your own liberation. This eventually moves you along the spectrum towards that end of the spectrum that is the realization, the awakened realization of yourself as the universe, not as separate entities, but as this one great reality beyond birth and death. And you realize the great subtlety of arriving at that place. You realize you cannot make of it a goal, because to make it a goal is to separate yourself, to create an idea of it, and to aim for it, and to try to see how close you're getting to it. And you can't do that, because that's a dualistic action. And then you realize that, and you watch the thought that comes up to try to make it into a goal, and you let that thought simply go. Then you are doing the real effort of Zazen. You are doing enormously for yourself, not only for your liberation, but for just proximal things like your health, your attitude towards your fellow beings on the planet. Think about it again. When somebody cuts you off in traffic, when they do something that you think is a bad move in their automobile, you call them a jerk or worse. Suddenly you realize there are no jerks. There are only people who are doing the only thing possible. Do you see what I mean? This is chipping away at the seeds of evil. Because it's very easy to get encapsulated into an opinion. Many, many people are encapsulated into an opinion, not the extremity of the Taliban or these folks that created bombs, no. But places where they are certain of their righteousness, fundamentalists, folks that have the truth, meaning that other people do not. And therefore that other people can be objectified. And finally, we know from the history of human beings on the planet what happens. There are organized religions today that demonstrate this to us. Jehovah's Witnesses is one of them. They have ways in which, if someone goes against some of the rules that are propagated by the church, the congregation, the individual, is required to come to church services. And the congregation is required to ignore them totally, as though they do not exist. This is called shunning. It is a way in which tribes have dealt with people who have deviated from their norms. Think about it. This is very important. Think about it the next time that you say, what a stupid guy. Whenever you make a judgment like that, you are allowing yourself to be taken over by these thoughts, and these thoughts are the seeds of evil, in the sense of encapsulating you more and more away from that which can liberate you. When you do that, you realize this is a very alive process. I realize when I call somebody a jerk or a stupid person that I'm really saying a lie, because I really know that that person could not have done anything differently at that time. I may not like what they do. It may not be what I would prefer to do under similar circumstances, but that's the way it is. They're not bad. They're just who they are. That realization to help you to contribute to your own bondage is an enormous benefit of truly practicing the way of Zen. Zen Master Hakuin used to speak of what he called the continual spirit of Zazen. And this attitude, in a manner of speaking, is the cultivation of the continual spirit of Zazen. And I tell you that unless you continue the spirit of Zazen, occasional times sitting on a cushion, are not enough. It has to be a transformation of your life. And when you realize what this really means, you realize, as I just said a few moments ago, there is no alternative. Do you want to be in bondage? Do you want to continue being an automaton run by these thoughts that course through your mind? Talking and talking and talking about them, making stories about them, trying to explain them, all the rest of it. Shh. Slow down a bit. People are hurtling forward in their lives. Got to get to the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And there's no room in there. They leave no room for this life-saving process of Zazen. In the mind, under all circumstances, walking down the street, sitting in your car waiting for the light, everywhere. I don't mean closing your eyes and putting your hands in your lap, no. I mean this attitude towards whatever courses through your mind. Being sensitive and aware of it and doing what is necessary to help your liberation. This has its fruits right now, the fruits of greater serenity, greater peace, greater a kind of joy that grows in your life. And it has the greater contribution of moving you along the spectrum towards that which it is the function of Zazen to help people to realize that they and all things are just one reality. We'll end there tonight.